Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. And for the next 2 hours, if you're doing nothing else, you're welcome to stick with us because we're going to talk about car and car-related stuff, tires and oils and whatever you have, whatever argument exists at your house between husband and wife or son and daughter or daughter and wife and son and dad and all that kind of stuff. We can usually handle those kinds. All you have to do is give us a call. Let us know what your issue is or what the question is more likely. It's just the question, 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960 is the number. We have five lines available. Gil answers the phone. And he'll tell me in my ear, Becky's next or Steve's next or whatever. And then of course we have to do some breaks. So we're going to have to kind of get those in situations. Sometimes I'll have to break the phone call into before the break and after the break. And that's good too. 602-508-0960. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Action Auto Repair, I-17 in Deer Valley. I've known Tom since 1983. He's a good guy. He knows what quality workmanship looks like and smells like. He has excellent customer service skills, and so does his staff, and a good fast turnaround time. Now, all of us are suffering from turnaround time right now. It's just because it is what it is. But we're doing the best we can, and I think most of us, and I know Tom is one of us, it's just we take you in order. That's the best we can do is we just take you in order. So anyway, Action Auto Repair has ASE Master Certified Technicians, and they want to help you as owners to understand what they're doing and why so you can make informed decisions, because after all, you make the decisions. That's Action Auto Repair at I-17 in Deer Valley. Okay. You're going to have to listen to me complain about something, and I'm sorry about that, but it's just the way it is. Yesterday, we were in a big home improvement center, and we were looking for a toolbox, a specific toolbox, and as we walked around the toolboxes, there was this flyer, and it was exactly the measurements we needed to fit into a compartment in the horse trailer. And so we took that and we took it to the first person and the person that worked there, and they couldn't help us. And we went to the next person and they couldn't help us. So we found this guy who had a hat on and a Home Depot belt on, and he was frantic. And I said to him, "You work here?" He goes, "Yes." And I said, "Okay, well, I'll wait right here when it's my turn." So he came back and he says, "What's up?" I says, "Would you check to see where these are at?" And he says, "Well, they're on the floor." And I said, "Okay, so what do you think we should do?" "Well, you should walk the floor." "Okay, good." So we walked the whole floor. We were there 57 minutes altogether. So then we tracked him down and we said, "We can't find them." So he goes, "Let me look again." And he goes, "Oh," he says, "they're over here on aisle 15, but they're up high." And I said, "Okay, so what do we do now?" He goes, "Well, let me get a forklift." And I said, "Okay." So then he comes back to me 10 minutes later and he goes, "No one here is certified for a forklift." So then he goes, "Come with me." So he takes me to the front counter. And he's talking to this lady who's a nice lady. Both of them are nice to me. And they say, "What?" And they're talking about how we can get it down and we can't do it now and maybe the night guys can do it. And so about that time, I recognize that they're all frazzled and they got their hands full with things going on. So I come up with a brilliant idea. Let me just change it. I came up with the idea that why don't I just order online and then pick it up tomorrow morning. And the lady goes, "That's perfect. Order it online. The night guys will pull it. It'll be staged for you. You pull out front. You enter what parking spot you're in and tell them you're there, and they'll bring it right out." I said, "Okay." So I was there at 9:11. And so I check in with my phone app, and I tell them I'm there, and I tell them I'm in spot 9. I think I was in either 1 or 4. I don't remember, but I wrote it in there. And so I wait, and I wait, and I wait, and nothing happens. And so I go inside, and there's this lady there, and I said, "Ma'am," they had told me I had checked in and the toolbox was here and they were going to bring it out to my truck. And she says, "You have to stand in line." And I said, "Well, no, I've already ordered it. I've already paid for it. They're just supposed to bring, you have to stand in line." "Well, there's three lines and they're all deep with people." And I said, "Well, that's not what they told me last night." "I don't care what they told you last night." I said, "Okie dokie." And I walk out. 4 minutes later, she cancels my order, and so I just leave. So it is part and parcel. Businesses are having a tough time finding people to work, and I'm sure this home improvement store in Payson that I went to was probably having trouble with staff as well. But there are at least two people in that store that have a half a brain, and there's at least one lady in that store that's missing some portion or missed a chapter or two of customer service because there was no reason for me to wait in line again unless the only two people that could bring that out was her and one of the other cashiers that was helping the people in line. It was just a crazy thing. Just a crazy thing. So anyway, I think I'm probably going to cut up my credit card and send it to them. I just don't understand that how they change, and obviously it changes depending on who you're talking to. But in the auto repair industry, we have our faults as well, and some of us play by the rules, some of us don't. Some of us do the very best we can to accommodate you. I had a customer the other day that complained that one of my shops, he took it in for a check engine light, and they charged him $145. He declined to have the work done. And his statement was that they pulled the code. That's all they did. No, that's not true. Let me explain. When you pull the code, it says, I see a problem in this circuit. Now, you've got to go find out what's wrong. I'll give you an example. I think in a case like this that was similar that I arbitrated, the customer had a mass airflow sensor signal. And so once you get the signal and you know that it's a signal problem, then you plug in a very sophisticated device that costs $10,000 to the car. So now you're going to place yourself in between the mass airflow sensor and the computer, and you're going to watch what goes on. So you start the car up, and you should see the mass airflow sensor, for instance, goes from 0 to 1. Okay, the engine's running and idling. Does the mass airflow sensor see 1? No, it only sees 1/10 of 1. So you go through this entire process, and ultimately it's not the mass airflow sensor that's the fault, because everybody thinks that because the code says mass airflow sensor, it's the mass airflow sensor. That's flat BS. It isn't the mass airflow sensor. In this particular car case, it had a tube between the mass airflow sensor, a big rubber tube, and the intake had cracked and broken, and it was sucking unmetered air. So while the engine thought that the foot was at half 50% throttle, in reality it wasn't. And so it didn't jive because there was an air leak in this tunnel of air that moves into the mouth of the engine. So the repair is not to replace the mass airflow sensor. The repair is to either, a cowboy repairs, tape up the hose. That's not a really great idea, but put a new hose on is the better idea. And so when you go down to AutoZone and CarQuest and O'Reilly's and all those guys, they don't have the capability to tell you exactly what's wrong. They're telling you your problem is in Tombstone, and they won't even tell you Arizona. Their problem is with the mass airflow sensor. Well, most people think, okay, well, the mass airflow sensor is bad. They go buy a new one. And when they put it on, and 99 times out of 100, it don't fix it. And here's why I know that is because the parts vendors tell me that the kind of places where people do look at the code and then say, oh, your mass airflow sensor is bad, they have tremendous returns. So people buy their mass airflow sensor for hundreds of dollars. They put it on. The code comes back. Now, if they're really lucky, they kept the old one, they put it on, they box up the new one in the box and return it, maybe. But most people don't do that. They throw the old mass airflow sensor away, throw the box away, probably the receipt too. Now they're stuck with it. That's how it works. So it's not fair for you to assume that pulling the code tells you what to do. It doesn't. It tells you what state the problem is in. It's in Minnesota. You got to find the city, the street, and the address. And that's where we come into these, what we call a scanner. And a scanner is a proprietary device that costs thousands of dollars that gives you numbers. And it interfaces the computer. And it goes, look here, Mark, you're only seeing 8 grams of air, and really you ought to be seeing 14 grams of air based on the fact that this is at idle. Okay, well, then that's the reason. We got an air leak somewhere. Let me find the air leak. Oh, look here. I put a piece of duct tape over the big tear. It goes from 8 to 12. Boop, boop, we're done. Now, I made it sound easy, but obviously it's not. But that's kind of how it works. The code tells you that the problem is in a state, Montana, California, New York, Florida, Texas. You have to find the city, the street, and the address. And that's what it's all about. So he was upset because he paid $145 for them to give him a diagnosis, which basically they did everything but replace the part, and he said no, and that was it. And so it's the customer's prerogative to pull the rug and say no. That's okay. You still have to pay for our work. You agreed to the diagnosis. And that's what we did at diagnosis. But pulling the code and looking at the code. Now, when you go into the auto parts store, they're going to give you a sheet or two of all the possibilities of what could be wrong. Now, that sheet is probably going to have your repair on it. It's a well-defined piece of equipment. Otherwise, the sheet itself has pretty much all of the possibilities. The problem is you don't have a way of testing any of that stuff. You can't watch it perform. You can't apply vacuum to it. You can't take your air gun and blow through it to see if mass airflow sensor goes from 20 to 200. You can't do any of that. And so if you want to buy a scanner, that's okay. They start at about $4,000 or $5,000, and some of the import ones are $10,000 to $15,000 to $20,000. So you can buy one if you want. But by the time you buy one, it's going to be a lot cheaper to have Salem take your, you know, service of your car, because he's going to guarantee the diagnosis. So anyway, that's kind of how it works out. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Automatic Transmission Exchange. Phil has been around the Valley since 1968. Phil knows transmissions when they first came out in the 50s and in the 60s. He's worked on them. He understands the fundamentals of a transmission. He understands what makes it shift from first to second to third, overdrive, so forth and so on. So he's a transmission guy that's been around since day one of automatic transmissions. So if you're looking for a guy that really knows automatic transmissions, then you go to Automatic Transmission Exchange at 40th Street in Washington. I've known Phil for years and years, and I use him specifically for the old cars, because you get a 1965 Buick in there with an automatic transmission, a 2-speed power glide, and it's got a particular problem, then I need Phil to kind of guide me through that, because he's been there. He was there then. And all of this translates to the new electronic transmissions that do everything electronically, because all they're doing is, instead of using vacuum or throttle value or speed or RPM, they're using a different sensor. That's all. So you still have to know where the sensor's at and what it sees and what the numbers are supposed to mean. And by the way, everything you see is numbers. So it says mass airflow 14. You better know that it should be 8 to 10 at idle and not 14. So you need to know that. And that's what it's all about. 602-508-0960. Well, welcome back, everybody. 20 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name's Mark Salem, and we're talking about cars. The name of the show is Under the Hood, and anything under the hood, transmissions, air conditioning, stuff like that. If you have a dispute or you think you have a dispute with an auto repair shop, you're welcome to bring it to the table, and we'll talk about it. I would appreciate it if you wouldn't say the name of the shop, but we can talk about the particulars. And I might have something to offer you, and maybe I don't, and you've got nothing to lose. By the same token, if you took your car in and they told you that you needed this, then we can talk about that. How many miles are on your car? Have you ever had the transmission serviced before? Do you have any symptoms? Do you have any check engine lights? Those kinds of questions, and we can talk about those. 602-508-0960. AutoDynamics is Sun City's largest and most trusted source of complete automotive services, as far as I'm concerned. They've been around since 1982. I've known Chuck since the early 70s. He owns that facility. His technicians are not paid a commission or a percent of your repair bill. Therefore, they are not motivated to jack up the price. They're paid an hourly rate, and they're very happy there. So if you're in Sun City, I recommend Automotive Dynamics on the north side of Grand Avenue, just west of 99th Avenue. Auto Dynamics, north side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue. It's no secret in the auto repair industry that we have had and continue to do stuff that gives us all black eyes. But today, what's really causing concern is when you get on the internet and you start Googling, and somebody on Google or somebody here said to fix your car. I think it's important to let's look at the big picture. You don't have lots of doctors out there diagnosing illnesses on the internet. There's not a lot of them, and I think they're going to say to you that we have to take your temperature and your blood pressure, and we have to look at your blood, we have to look at your urine, we have to look in your eyes to see if you're dying. We have to do a bunch of stuff in order to fine-tune and focus in on the repair. It's the same way in your car. Your car has a brain, and some of the cars have multiple brains. Your car has a brain, and it's going to have data in there. And that's what's important is we look at the data, but the code itself is not going to be right. It'll be wrong 75% of the time. 75%. Now, if you want to gamble and you think, okay, I'm going to put a coolant sensor in it, then go ahead and put a coolant sensor in it. You have a 25% chance of being right and a 75% chance of just spending a whole lot of money. There's lots of people out there that are going to tell you that they can diagnose your car. The problem with that is you have to do a bunch of stuff. I'll give you an example. I have an O2 sensor code, okay? An oxygen sensor code. Very common one. My goodness, they're common. You know what we've done to fix an oxygen sensor code without replacing the oxygen sensor? We replace fuel filters a lot that cause oxygen sensor codes. Let me explain. The fuel filter is restricted. So the fuel system wants to deliver on a 1 to 20 scale, wants to deliver 9 to the engine. So it sets up and delivers 9, but the problem is the 9 goes in the filter, but it comes out substantially less. The volume of gasoline coming out the other side of the filter is changed. So you go in and you look at these lean conditions, and you go, well, it could be a vacuum leak, it could be a PCV valve, it could be an EGR valve, it could be something in the vapor recovery system, it could be a bad O2 sensor, but here's how you check it. And of course, you can't do this because the equipment is rather expensive. Everything in your computer is a 1 through 5 volts with a few exceptions. 1 through 5. Otherwise, we are talking 1 through 5. Now, what's important is most of the time, in almost every circumstance, one is low and high is high, okay? That's important. So what happens is when the computer is perfect and the O2 sensor and the trim is perfect, guess what number between 1 and 5 we get? And the answer is 2.5. That's it. So the operational range of this O2 sensor is right there in the middle. So if I want to check the O2 sensor, I plug in my scanner. And I create a lean condition where the engine is aspirating a whole lot of air, and I'm just going to give it a drop or two of fuel just to keep it running. And when I do that, when I cut off the fuel supply, and when I just bring that motor, I want to see 1. That's what I want to see. Now, after I see 1, I go, okay, it can see 1. A lean condition, 1. I want to see a 5. Now, what do? I get some carb spray or some propane, and I flood the air intake with a whole bunch of extra fuel, and the O2 sensor is going to scream 5. But 5 means there's way too much fuel. Shut the faucet off. Shut the faucet off. That's how it works. 1 through 5. Guess how your speed sensor works? Yep, you're right. 1 is the car's not moving, and 5, the car's doing 100 miles an hour. That's how it works. So if you want to check your speed sensor, all you do is plug in your scanner and you go take it for a ride around the block. And if the speedometer says 31 and the speed sensor is talking 31 and the computer's seeing 31, then you've got a connection problem someplace because everything's acting right. But on the other hand, if you're driving around the block and it says it's 16 miles an hour and you're sitting at a traffic light, then there's a problem that you got to fix because the computer goes, wait a minute, how can we be doing 16 miles an hour and I'm looking at the speed sensor, and it says we're doing 16 miles an hour. And in reality, we're moving, and I can see all four tires moving, and I basically know that we're doing about 20 miles an hour. So how is that happening? And that's how it works. Everybody relies on everybody else, and there could be at least 50 sensors in your car. Okay, we have a caller. Who might that be, Gil?
Say good morning to Hector.
Hector, good morning.
Yes, sir. How you doing?
I'm good. Thank you.
Now, I just heard your little note on a complaint of a car dealership without mentioning their name, which I won't do, and I'll try to make it as quick as possible.
Okay.
I had a Nissan Sentra, an 01, that I had taken for an engine code. It was running completely fine. They took it in, and two computers later, and almost a year of them actually having the vehicle. They had worked on it. They ended up telling me they couldn't fix it. I already had paid, and then I had took it off the lot. The car was shaking. They told me, "Don't worry, the computer will reset itself, and it'll run just fine after a while of driving." That didn't happen, so I called them and told them. I even called you back then, and you told me that they should be able to figure it out, because if it's an electrical item, they should be able to find that, which they didn't. Now, no, I took it back, and they told me they couldn't do anything, and then the actual owner of the shop called me and told me, "Sorry, you have to bite the bullet, pay for it, and we can't fix it. The car wasn't running; it was shaking."
Okay, I only got a minute and a half. Okay, so you got to kind of wrap this up.
Okay, go ahead. There you go. Well, that's where it ends. I ended up having to jump the car because I ended up having to buy another one.
Okay. Well, I probably would have stopped payment on the credit card. And I would have said they provided no service. They made a bunch of guesses at my expense, and I don't want to pay for this. And most of the time, the credit card company will back you up when you say stuff like that. Here's all the paperwork. You can see they guessed here, they guessed here, they guessed here. None of this fixed the problem. And they kept working on it and working on it, but they kept guessing and guessing. And so I don't want to pay any of this. And I've never seen in a credit card company, especially the ones that are really consumer pro, like Discover, MasterCharge, Visa, American Express, they'll just stop. What's the car dealer going to do? Threaten to sue Discover? Threaten to sue MasterCard? Come on. MasterCard will pull their ability to use MasterCards, and that'll hurt them really hard. So there's a lot of in-betweens there, but what you talk about happens a lot. It oftentimes happens on cars that don't have a real big presence in our industry. So those 1%er cars, those 2% of the cars on the market, those are the ones that we don't have a lot of experience in. And as a result of that, many of us fall down. Well, welcome back, everybody. 602-508-0960 is the phone number. The lines are wide open. There's five of the lines. If you have a car question, you're welcome to join us. 602-508-0960. We just got done talking to Hector, and Hector had an unfortunate situation where he had a code in his car, and he took it to, he says, a dealership, and I believe him. And he says two PCs, and 1 year later, it's still not fixed, and they just told him, you know, they couldn't help him. I don't know how long ago that lasts, but it does happen. And he says, "I didn't know what else to do, but let me tell you a couple of funny stories." Because I'm in the dispute resolution business, and I oftentimes deal with these kinds of cases on behalf of insurance companies or lawyers or even the car manufacturer, Chevy, Ford, Dodge, Honda, Toyota, Nissan, all that stuff. What tickles me the most is people's unique way to make their point about a repair shop that took advantage of them. And I remember this one lady used to pick it. And she'd pick it in the morning, like 15 minutes before they opened until about an hour afterwards. And she had different signs, and it says, "If you want your, you better have a rabbit's foot in your purse if you want them to find and fix a problem." it was hilarious. And then the next day it might say, "They use Ouija boards to figure out what's wrong with your car. And they won't let you talk to anybody, and they won't call you back." I mean, it was just a never-ending sign, and it got a lot of media coverage, and it got my attention as a shop owner, because I don't want that lady in front of my shop. But when you get down to it, there are ways to just really aggravate the heck out of legal ways, funny ways, ornery ways of, you know, aggravating somebody enough to where they might raise the red flag. But it's just the way it is. We have dealerships, and they're not in any particular order. Dealerships, we have independent repair shops, we have chain stores, and then we have specialty shops. So specialty shops are obvious. They do upholstery, they do windshields, they do transmissions only. That's pretty obvious. You've got chain stores, so you've got a variety of stores in town that share the same name. Then you've got an independent repair shop. Typically, it's going to be owned and operated by a husband and or a wife, or both. And then you got the car dealerships. And nobody has a market on the technicians. It'd be really fun in my life if I only had to work on Chevrolets. I would just be a genius. A genius, a genius. I'm telling you. But unfortunately, Alfa Romeo to Mercury Zephyrs and everything in between comes through our doors. And I will admit, there are times that we say to the customer, after we've had a chance to look it over, we've never seen this problem before, we've never fixed this problem before, we are in the process of trying to find a shop that really specializes in your cars. Now, you can do the same thing. You can call a bunch of parts stores and say, who really works on Alfa Romeos? Do you sell any parts for Alfa Romeos? Who is well known for working on Alfa Romeos? You can do that. And if you go to the parts houses and one of them, like Worldpac, raises their hand and say, we sell lots to this guy for Alphas, then you need to go to that guy because he's working on those cars and he's probably your best bet. Some of the parts stores will help you with that and some of them won't, but there's plenty of them out there. Another thing with respect to issues of, it's pricing now. Pricing is a really big issue because most of us put the part number on the work order, and you can Google the part number and figure out what the price range is on that thing. But you have to understand this. The shop owner is going to make a lot of money. Well, a lot. The shop owner is going to make some percentage of the gross profit on your part because he's responsible for warrantying that.
2 minutes.
So we make a profit on the part. You can't begrudge us for that. So if we buy it for $2 and we sell it for $5, you can't begrudge us for that. Or if we buy it for $10 and we sell it for $14 or $15, you can't do it. That's money that's there in case you have a problem with that part. And most shops will take the part off and put it on a warranty period and not charge you the labor. But there are shops out there that will charge you the labor because we're only going to warranty the part. And the labor had nothing to do with the failure of the part. Now, when you say the labor had nothing to do with the failure of the part, that brings up a whole new conversation because, well, it depends. Did the part have parameters that you needed to set, that you needed to fine-tune? Was the EGR passageway cleaned out so you didn't put a new EGR valve on a passageway that was plugged with carbon, and the plugged carbon passageway was the real problem, but you misdiagnosed it because it had an EGR code on it.
1 minute.
So you replaced the EGR, and when you took the EGR off, you didn't have enough sense to look inside the exhaust port and see that it was plugged solid. Those are the kinds of things that happen in car repair. So the self-defense mechanism of car repair is real simple. First of all, ask for an explanation. And perhaps ask them to deal with you in email. That way you have it in writing. Number two, you tell them you want your old part back. Why do you do that? Well, here, if they put in a PCM or an EGR valve or whatever, and it doesn't fix the code and it comes back and it doesn't fix the drivability problem, you can say, let's put the old part back in. It clearly didn't fix my problem. Now, most of you aren't going to take an old fuel pump out of the gas tank and put it in your car. We're not going to put a fuel pump. But we do have Tupperware for stuff like that, where we put the stinky part inside a piece of Tupperware and we snap the lid on it and we give it to you. We write the work order number on top of it with a black magic marker and stuff like that. There's lots of shops. We learn from one another. Somebody came up with that idea and I thought it was genius. So you could put it in your garage, and after you look at it for 90 days and the car is fine and fixed, then you take the Tupperware thing along with the old fuel pump and throw it in the trash. We're done. That's how it works. So you got a car question or a car problem, or if you got a present dilemma and you want to run it by me, then I'm all yours, 602-508-0960. Okay, Gil, you want me to pick it up from here, buddy?
Yes.
Okay. Folks, the best part of this show is the guy you just heard just a minute ago. His name is Gil Estrada, and Gil is my producer and my director, and he keeps me in line, and he makes me hit all my mark. You see, because this is what radio is all about. I have to take a break at 17 after the hour, okay? Now, Mark Salem's time, and I have a clock in front of me that's to the second, but that can be anywhere between 16 and 20 as far as I'm concerned. Because I don't care. So anyway, and then I have to take a hard break at 30. Okay, so at the 30, at 30 minutes after the hour, exactly 30, not 30, 10 seconds, 30, I have to hit that one, and I always do. The 40 isn't, I'll be 5 minutes one way or the other, and the 58:50, that's out. I mean, he's adamant. He uses bad words when I don't hit my at top of the hour break at 58:50. And then we start all over again in the next hour. 17, I got to take a break. 30's a hard break. 17's not a hard break. 30's a hard break. 40's kind of flip-floppy and stuff like that. But if the show sounds good, it's because of Gil. It's not because of me. It's because he keeps me in line. It's kind of like he's in charge of the schoolhouse I'm in, and I'm the only one in this grade. And he's the teacher.
That's funny.
So I want you to picture that. Oh, Blackwell Automotive is at 40th Street and Greenway. I can just tell you that Tom is just a crazy guy, and he's really good at what he does. And he works on all your family cars. He works on your motorhomes. He works on your lawnmowers. But he also works on your vintage car. So he is multi-skilled, he's multi-talented, he knows right from wrong, and right now I was talking to him the other day and he said he's just up to his ears with cars. And like a lot of us are, we're all really busy. So if you're up there near 40th and Greenway, the only shop I'm going to tell you that I can recommend is Blackwell Automotive. Let's go to the phones. Kevin, thank you for holding. How can I help you?
Yeah, good morning, Mark. Yeah, I really enjoy your show. I was wondering what your take is on fuel additives to help keep your injectors clean, like diesel clean for your diesel motors, for example.
Okay. I don't believe in any of them. I don't sell any of them, but I'm more than happy if I have a customer and they put a note on the dashboard with a can of stuff and say, hey, put this this injector cleaner in my fuel tank when you do my oil change. I'm more than happy to do that. But let me explain. We're spraying fuel through little bitty orifices that are not quite the size of a human hair. And when we plug those up, there's no amount of magic potion lotion in a bottle that's going to clean that up. It's just not going to happen. So you have, first of all, injector problems are few and far between. I'm going to tell you honestly. They are few, both gas and diesel, and boy, we work on our fair share of diesels. We have a complete different division, the diesel and the performance division. They do a lot of diesel work. The fact of the matter is that's just not going to work. When you got when we're spraying it 8,000 PSI, if that rock or that piece of trash doesn't go through the nozzle and it hangs up behind the nozzle, there's nothing you can put in the fuel tank that's going to help it go through the little bitty hole the size of a human hair. So I think that they're feel-good stuff, but there's too many times that the customer comes in to my shop and others and says, hey, I've tried four or five different injector cleaners and stuff like that. Now, I would say 9 out of 10 times we have a connection problem at the injector, and if we fix the problem, then the injector's fixed. So if you want, you're better off to identify that injector, disconnect it, clean off the fittings, use a little compressed air both on the injector side and on the harness side, then put a dab of dielectric grease in there, snap it back on, and you have a better chance of fixing it doing that than anything else.
So all this talk about preventing buildup in the injectors and that sort of thing, or having injector cleaning service when you have your car service really isn't doing anything.
It's bull poop. That's what it is. Yes, listen, I don't sell it. I don't want it. You have to understand there's a lot of markup in that. I can buy something for $6 and sell it for $39.95. You know, if I'm a real motivated, I'm going to, hey, I got this stuff right here. It just works magic. You haven't had your injector clean for a long time. With your permission, I'm going to put $40 worth of cleaners in your fuel tank, and I'm telling you what, this stuff really works. Yeah, go ahead, Mark. That's what happens. So I don't sell it. I don't use it. Now, let me explain something. There are some times that I do use an additive in an effort to see if it makes a difference. I'll give you an example. Methyl ethyl ketone is a very caustic chemical, and it appears in some of the products that we actually stock. So if you've got a bad injector, or if you've got some problem in the oil system, maybe you've got a relief valve in the oil pump acting up or something like that, I might put a little bit of additive in the oil or in the fuel, and I'm looking for change. Now, it could be worse. So if you're my customer and you're standing in front of me, I'm talking to you, I could cause it to be worse, or I could fix it, or nothing happens. Chances of nothing is like 8 out of 10. Making it worse is 1 out of 10, and fixing it is 1 out of 10. You need to know that. So sometimes with an intermittent problem, we will try that. But as far as, this is what I say, and thank you for bringing this up, Kevin, and I'm glad you're laughing. If you think that you're going to, if people think that they're going to put something in the fuel tank and their car's going to love them and last longer, I got news for them. The car has a brain.
but it doesn't have any loving emotions. And your car doesn't know anything except what your right foot is doing, and that's it. And right. I abuse my vehicles all the time out in the ranch. I don't purposely abuse them, but my wife says I do, and my trucks love me. And I know that because they hardly break. But I also know that it's like a horse. I'm running my horses pretty hard, and they're all pretty healthy. And so, you know, that's why I got 160,000 miles on my Dodge truck. I'm knocking on wood. And I haven't done anything major except normal services. I'm really proud of that truck. And it's 11 years old now. And so I haven't done anything, but I don't let it idle like diesels guys do a long time. I don't do that. And I'm hauling trailers and cows and horses and boats and wood and tractors and stuff like that. So, I mean, it gets worked out, but no, there's no additives that is going to make your car love you and is going to eliminate the need for repair somewhere down the road.
Well, that's good to hear. You know, no other way to figure it out yourself, because you keep putting in the additives and the car runs good. Well, you say, okay, well, maybe that is working, but you have no way of knowing.
No, and you don't. But I do agree that there is times you may hear your shop say, I want to try this additive, and he's thinking to himself, it's got an injector, number six injectors acting up. I want to put this in there. I want to see if it'll do something to six. And if it makes six better, boom, I'm a hero. If it doesn't, no harm, no foul. All I did is sell him a $23 bottle of injector cleaner, and it didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
I already know six is still bad. I already know six is intermittent. I already know six is the problem. Now, the next thing I might do is swap six with seven and seven and six. If the problem moves...
Well, there you're able to see actual results where...
Yeah.
If everything's working good, you just don't know.
No, you're right.
You're trying to anticipate a problem, but it's good to hear somebody with experience like yours saying, hey... It doesn't really matter.
it's again in a nice way, and I'm going to get a call from a couple of shop owners after the show, and they're going to say you're an idiot, and they call me names, and they question my heritage, and they're friends of mine, and I don't care, but I'm just not a fan of the poor chemicals, P-O-U-R, not mm-hmm. P-O-O-R, P-O-U-R chemicals. I'm not a fan of that. They're not successful. It's a great marketing. And I want to tell you something. I make a lot of money out of that can. If that can cost me $8, I can sell it for $19.95. So, mm-hmm. you know, and there's no risk. If you come back and you're mad at me, then all I got to do is give you your money back. I'm okay with that. So, but just that's between you and me, okay, Kev?
All right, that was good. Thanks a lot, Mark.
All right, you bet. 602-507. No, it isn't. It's 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. And we have another caller. Who might that be?
Say good morning to Bill.
Bill, good morning.
Hey, I've got a 10-year-old Cadillac CTS. I have a service at the Cadillac dealer. They've never suggested I change the hoses or the belts. It's got all original hoses and belts, and I'm just wondering, is there some maintenance time where I should be changing them just to be safe?
Are you telling me that you've been to a dealer, your car is 10 years old, and no one's ever tried to sell you hoses and all the fluid changes? Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah, it's a Cadillac dealer, Coulter on Cadillac.
And I like Coulter, and they know I'm teasing them. Let me answer your question. My truck is 10 years old. I just had all the hoses and belts and all the fluids changed. And I'm a little late because I wish I would have done it about 1 to 125, and I think I'm at 141 right now. But I also said all the hoses and all the belts go behind the back seat. I want those extras in case I break down in Safford, Arizona on a Sunday morning and the technician says the parts stores are closed. I'm going to say, I got an extra belt in my truck. And I know it fits the truck because it came off my truck. So my answer to you is you're uncomfortable, and so am I. At 10 years, yes, all the rubber, and hopefully you've done all the fluids at least once, the brake fluid, the tranny fluid, the diff fluid, the cooling system. Hopefully you've done those, and that'll give you another 100,000 miles. So you should be okay.
It's got 126 on it, and it's really never had any repairs.
Yeah. No, what part of it?
It's even got the original brake lines, which is surprising.
Yeah. No, you're right about that. But I got to tell you, we probably do. Now, when you talk about original brake lines, 90% of your brake lines are metal, and then 10% are rubber. And I want to tell you, in Arizona, we might replace one or two brake lines a year and we have a 20 bay shop and we're full up. And so we don't place too much on that. Because if you said to me, when am I going to replace my brake lines? I'd say, I do all three of them, because you have three of them, or maybe four of them. I do all of them when the first one starts leaking. And you'll know, because the brake pedal will slowly fade to the floor. The red brake light will come on, but you'll still have brakes. And that's what it's all about. So you're not going to lose all your brakes, because even if you blow a line completely, Bill, even if you blow a line, you're only going to lose that axle. So if you blow a line, you're going to dump all the fluid on from your front brakes or your back brakes, but you still have the other half of the brakes. It doesn't mean you're not going to wet your pants because you're pushing hard on the pedal and it's not stopping like it used to. but you'll still be able to stop the car.
So which is a good shop to do it instead of going to the Cadillac dealer?
What part of town do you live in? What's your major cross street?
Around, not too far from Colter Cadillac.
On 25th Street Auto, Billy at 25th Street Auto, or Martin's Auto at 16th and Osborne. Either one of those young men, they're both descendants of their parents and their families. They both have, I admire both of them. I have their name in my cell phone and they have mine. And I know that 25th Street Auto or Martin's Auto, either one of those guys could help you out, and I'm quite sure you'll enjoy talking to the guy who signs the front of the paycheck.
Fair enough.
Okay.
Thank you.
You bet. You bet. TOT 25th Street and Martin's. I'm just going to write down this because he says I need to know the guy's name, and his name is Bill.
2 minutes.
Anyway, 602-508-0960. We're going to be back after the top of the hour news, weather, sports, and stuff. And so about 3 or 4 minutes after the top of the hour at 1103, 1104, somewhere around there, then we'll come back and we have another hour of conversations about car repair. I'm really good at, my husband says this, my dad says that. I'm really good at that. I'm really good that my wife does this and I tell her to stop it. I'm really good at that too. Sometimes the guy's wrong. Sometimes I go, well, in this particular case, I'm going to side with your wife. And so everybody has different habits and stuff. But I also want to remind you that in any car that's on the road today that's north of 1990, so 30 years, if your car's 30 years old, there is a black box on your car. The black box is awake all the time. Now, when there is a collision, when you lose 7 or 8 miles an hour in the blink of an eye, which means you just collided with another car, you hit a telephone pole, you hit a curb, whatever, the black box is going to go backwards and save a bunch of data. Don't think for a minute you're going to be able to lie to the cops about how fast you were going or what you were doing. You won't be able to do that. The black box is going to have that data. So you have two choices when you're talking to the police officer. You can say, I'd rather not talk to you. I'd rather have my husband talk to you or my attorney talk to you. And I want to respectfully say that. Or just refuse to answer the questions, because he's going to look in the black box, or somebody's going to look in the black box, and they're going to know the speed limit was 45 and they're going to know you were doing 67. So you're not going to be able to say that that other guy was speeding when you're doing 67 and 45. And that's a day in the life of Mark Salem, because I do lots of mechanical stuff like that. So, anyways, the phone number, 602-508-0960. One more time, 602-508-0960.
Oh, well, you're actually through the board here, so you're on the air.
Oh, well, that's good news. Good thing I didn't say anything bad, right? Use bad words or something?
You never do, Mark.
I know. And thanks for covering for me. Yeah. I appreciate that. I know that you're helping me out there. I can tell that. Anyway, 602-508-0960. I know we have a caller on the line, and we're going to just grab that right now, and we're going to go to Don. Don, good morning. How can I help you?
Oh, yes, sir, Mark. Listen, I talked to you a couple of weeks ago when Nate was on the program.
Uh-huh.
I've got that 2001 GMC four-cylinder, and I had it diagnosed as a rod knock. Now, I'm going to take it to Thompson. I'm going to flatbed it over. But is it possible to do rod bearings from the bottom end without pulling the engine?
Well, it really matters.
Lifting it up.
It matters on what's the easiest way. Here's what I'm saying. We have to pull if we're going to do rod bearings on it, we have to replace the crank. And if we have to replace the crank, we have to take everything off the front of the crank, and we have to disconnect the crank from the flex plate or the flywheel, and we have to drop the crank off the bottom. Then we replace the crank, we take the rod bearings out of the rods and then reattach them to the crankshaft. Now, I suggest to you that you let Thompson's do whatever they want to do, and I'll tell you why. I would say to you, if it was my shop, I'm not doing it that way. I'm going to take your engine out. I'm going to flip it over. I'm going to put it in an engine stand, and I'm going to do all my work right next to my bench. I'm going to clean as I go. I'm going to do a perfect job. And when I'm done, I'm going to rotate. I'm going to put the oil pan on it. And putting the oil pan on it when it's on an engine stand is a whole lot easier than putting an oil pan on it when it's when the engine's still in the car. Right. So, and I think the difference between do the crankshaft in the car and do the crankshaft out of the car might be the difference of $100 to $150. And so,
okay, great.
I wouldn't give you that choice if it were my shop. I would tell you I'm going to do it this way.
Okay, they're still under the weather, so they can't even take it for a while. In the meantime, I bought a 2000 Nissan V6. It runs like a top with 194,000. Even the tranny works perfect. Should I service it anyway?
You didn't get any maintenance records.
At 194?
Okay, you didn't get any maintenance records from anybody?
No.
Okay.
I bought it from a buddy,
okay,
and I drove it, and everything's just perfect. I checked all the fluids, and everything's clean.
Okay. I think to answer your question is I'd want to look at I would want to take the dipstick out of the transmission, and I'd want to take a white paper towel and wipe it off, and I'd want to look at it. If it's brown, 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 and smells burnt, I'm not quite sure I would do that. I would understand there's a slight risk of causing a problem that you don't have today. There's a slight risk of causing a problem you don't have today. On the other hand, if it's nice, pink, and clean, then chances are it's already been changed. So you're looking at the two different fluids on opposite ends of the spectrum. Who's going to do the rod bearings for you?
I'm going to flatbed it over to Thompson's when they have an opening.
Okay. You know, Thompson's just got hit by a storm and it blew the roof off. Yeah. God bless Bert, Ryan, and Thelma. They are really, really troopers.
Insurance adjusters on customers' cars, and all that.
Yep. You're exactly right. You're exactly right. And I talked to him about that, and he said the same thing. I think I'd let Brian decide whether he's going to take it in or out. And I would also just say, when I drop it off, would you look at the transmission fluid on my car and tell me if you think I need to have it changed? That's what I would do.
Yeah, I'm going to follow the flatbed over in my new Nissan. It's a 2000 Nissan. What do you call it? The Pathfinder Desert Runner with a can. It's a really nice truck, but I'll check the tranny fluid. If it's burnt, I'll have it serviced with a minimal chance of causing more issues than I have now. I don't have any issues now.
Okay.
But if it needs servicing, I'll go ahead and service it, and it should help it.
Okay, and I think the risk is well worth the reward. Now there's two things. Let's talk about the tranny real quick. I can pull the pan and change 3 quarts and change the filter, but the thing holds probably 8 quarts. So in the cork converter, which is this big round thing that spins, inside there is 5 or 6 quarts. So the question now becomes, should I just do 3 or 4 quarts and do the filter and then hold my breath, and if everything's okay, then he brings it back. I'm going to hook up my flush machine to his 2 cooler lines, and I'm going to replace all the fluid. I'm going to just flush out all the ugly and put new in. So it's a two-part process that could easily cost you $300 to $500.
That's no problem. If it's burnt, I'm going to just have it flushed.
Okay. Yeah, and I would agree. But you want to do the filter, so he's gonna flush it. He's gonna pull the pan and just replace the filter, put the pan back up, and then he's gonna flush it, and he'll get all the fluid that way. Okay?
Okay, terrific.
Okay.
Thanks, Mark. Hey, you have a really entertaining and educational program. I really
thank you.
Admire you, and I appreciate you being there, man.
Thank you very much for that. That's very kind of you to say that. And frankly, I get as much joy out of this. We've been doing radio in the Valley since 1988. I've been at this station for 12 years, and I love this station because it's just a different clientele. And it's people like yourself that have questions, and they don't want to challenge me, and they don't want to argue with me and all that other kind of stuff, which happens at other stations that I've done. But I've been real happy in the Phoenix Valley area, and I want to draw your attention to this, and I do this every once in a while. I never say the name. Name
you could
of
be
my...
a stand-up comedian, or you could be an auto tech instructor. Either one.
Well, thank you for that. But see, here's the deal. When I decide to be stupid, if I go too far, then I get a call from Jim, the general manager, either today or Monday morning, and it starts off with, "Did you really say da 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 da?" And I say, before you even get to the end of the sentence, the answer is yes, I did say that.
Absolutely.
And he goes, "Well, can we avoid that kind of stupidity on the air?" And I said, "Are you talking about when you're talking? Are you talking about when I'm talking?" No,
you're all right, Mark.
Thank you for that. And just to clarify, they've never talked to me. I started in 2011 at this station, and they've never once called me and told me I did something wrong. So whatever I'm doing good. Thank you very much for that. 602-508-0960. If the lines are wide open, there's five of them. You've got a 1 in 5 chance if you've got a car question. 602-508-0960. And part of the reason that I do really good is because of Gil. You see, he's the engineer that's driving the train. I'm sitting 2 or 3 rows behind him in this big Barca lounger. And all I have to do is look at a clock. Now, here, it is difficult in this respect because there are breaks that I have to take. I have to take a break at the 17 mark, but that's a floater. So I can do 16, 16 and a half, 17, 17 and a half, 18. I can mess around with it. I don't have to hit it on the mark. But then at 30, I have to be out at 29:59. I got to be out. Otherwise, Gills uses bad words. He says them in my ears. I'm in Payson. He's in Phoenix. And I can take my headphones off, and I can hear him yelling at me. So it's just one of those things, and I have to live with it. And Gil's been assigned to me, and I've been assigned to Gil, and that's kind of how it works. But I don't think I've ever worked with anybody more professional than Gil. I mean to tell you, I missed a hard break the other day for a minute or a minute and a half, and he covered it up. He covered it up. No one ever knew. So instead of breaking at 30, I broke at like 31:50. And he rearranged everything to make it look like I didn't make a mistake. So I'm surrounded by really, really good people, and for that, I'm blessed. When it comes to car repair, I'll tell you a little bit about myself. I was born and raised in southern Arizona, in Douglas. I went to Tempe High School, graduated from Tempe High. I worked at a gas station my whole Tempe High year. But part of who I am today, there are two gentlemen that are directly responsible for who I am today, and that's Paul Painter and Ben Elkins. Ben Elkins was the auto mechanics teacher at Tempe High. Paul Painter was his assistant. Later, all three of my kids went through auto mechanics with Paul Painter when he finally got out of teaching as assistant, and when he finally got his own auto shop at Marco Stanisa. So all three of my kids took auto repair from Paul Painter. So Ben Elkins and Paul Painter are directly responsible, more than my parents, directly responsible for who I am today, both the good and the bad. I can't tell you from auto repair side how many times Mr. Elkins looked at me and rolled his eyes and turned around and walked away for something I said or something I did. But I knew they loved me, and I'll tell you one thing. When you're a junior, when back then you were a junior at Tempe High School, you took an auto mechanics class. It was a 1 hour. Now, there was 6 classes of auto mechanics. So your senior year, Mr. Elkins, and I call him Mr. Elkins, but he's also a customer of mine, and he's since passed. He would post the senior class, advanced class. And if you got on there, oh, you were a top dog. So he was going to post it at 11 o'clock. And I was a junior, and I was hoping that he picked me for the senior advanced class of auto mechanics. But I was kind of didn't figure he would because I had been a big ass. And I acted stupid, and I figured that he probably didn't want the distraction. But where my name was at on that list, it was on the list, but it was last.
1 minute.
It was last. So fast forward 100 years later, he's in my lobby along with the high school principal, Jim Osmond. And they're talking. And I sat down and I was talking, because I spent a lot of time in Mr. Osmond's office. And I said to Mr. Elkins, was there a message? Because when you put the list, when you posted the list of all the juniors that were going to advance to the really big shot 2-hour auto class, I was last. He goes, you got the message. You got the message. And then Mr. Osmond said, I really liked it when you had to come to my office because I could, you know, have you go pick up my dry cleaning and fill my car up with gas and stuff like that. And that's the kind of thing that these are the people that had such a good effect on me. And I, so I say they're not responsible for the bad Mark. They're responsible for who Mark is today, for however you figure that out. Anyway, the lines are wide open. 602-508-0960. We have 5 lines available. You're welcome to call. 602-508-0960. Anything car related, I'll answer. And anything other than that, if you need a psychiatric treatment, or if you need a good chiropractor, I can help you with that just as well. Welcome back, everybody. 21 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. We talked about Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing in Mesa. He's the only shop in Mesa that I say is a great shop. He's the only one. Others have applied. Some have gone out of business that I would have accepted, but Thompson's has been there and been there for a very long time. Both Brian and Thelma come from families that ran gas stations in the 50s, 60s, and 70s in Mesa, and I was in high school back then. And so I'm real aware of their families, and they're both they know the difference between right and wrong, and it's a great place. That's Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. On the other side of town, Kurt's Auto is at I-17 and Bell Road. Kurt's has pulled rabbits out of his hat. I can't tell you how many times where somebody in that geographical area said, I got a problem nobody can fix. And the next thing I hear is I get a call from the customer that said, Kurt's fixed it. He's really good. Kurt is a really good guy. He has really good staff. He knows right from wrong, and he does from oil changes, too. Every time I tune into this FM station, my windshield wipers turn on. Now, I'm making that up, but those are the kinds of things that he really revels in. He likes those kinds of things. But Kurt's Automotive, I-17 and Bell, northeast corner, great shop. Mike, thank you for holding. How can I help you?
Hey, I graduated from Tempe High, too.
Oh, okay.
Do you ever give purchase recommendations, recommend certain types of trucks?
I'm happy to discuss your list and tell you my honest opinion based on how much it's going to cost you for the repair. Is it a dependable vehicle? Is it a good vehicle? Does it have good resale value? And it is it one of those? Now, before we even start, and I'm happy to hear what you're thinking. The Chevy, the Dodge, and the Ford are obviously the three big dogs, but then you got Hondas and Toyotas. Those seem to be the big five, and they dominate the market, those guys. And I'm going to go say right now, any one of those is fine. But if you have something else, hit me with it, and I'll tell you what I think.
Well, what I was looking for was a four-wheel drive that has either a posi track or a limited slip or lockers. And I'd been looking at an Isuzu Viacross. Mm-hmm. Have you ever, are you familiar with those?
Yes.
And either that or, I was also thinking of a Jeep Scrambler.
Okay.
CJ8. And those are kind of overpriced because most of them are, I guess they're considered classics. I'm not sure why they're priced so high, but they are what they are. So I've been mostly looking at those two.
Okay, so let me ask you, stop. Well, let me ask you a question. A regular four-wheel drive can have a locking differential in the back, but there's nobody out there that I know of, and I've been wrong before, that has a locking differential in the front. Nobody. Because we need to steer with the front tires. So when we make a hard right turn, the right front tire on a right turn turns one revolution and the left front tire turns three, and we can't lock that rear end up, or otherwise we're just going to chew the teeth off of it. So if you're trying to find something with power to all four wheels all the time, you're not going to find that unless you build it. And if you build it, then you're going to really be unhappy because you're not going to be able to steer it. So all the vehicles in the Chevy, Ford, Dodge, Honda, Toyota, and even your Isuzu, you can get them with a positraction rear end. That means you have three of the four tires pulling for you all the time. I suggest to you that if you need one more tire, it ain't going to help you get out of the mess you're in where you already stuck three tires. So I don't know why you're looking for that locker front end.
I'd be satisfied with just the rear.
Okay, then anything's got that. They all, just tell them you want a locking rear end. When you order the car, just tell them, I wanted a posi. In the old days, we called it positraction, but basically today it's called a locker, a locking rear end. So when I'm out four-wheeling, I want power to both of those rear tires all the time.
Gotcha. Okay.
All righty. All right.
Thanks so much.
Yeah, you're welcome. Yeah, four-wheel drive doesn't mean four-wheel drive. It really means three-wheel drive. and to be perfectly honest with you, if you get stuck with three-wheel drive, one more tire is not going to help you. That's all there is to it. It's just not going to help you. All righty. Who might that be, Gil?
Say hello to Al.
Hi, Al. How can I help you, buddy?
Hey, good morning. We've talked before, but I want to thank you for all of this. You do a great job.
Thank you.
I don't deal with anybody unless they're on your list.
Well, thank you for that. Thank you.
Hey, I got three gee-whiz questions.
Okay.
That I've been sitting on for a long time. On batteries, would you explain cold cranking amps?
Yeah. Cold cranking amps is how much electricity using the amperage number. How much electricity can this battery put out when it's really, really cold? It's also an indication of the strength of the battery. So a 300 cold cranking amp is not going to be as strong 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, cold and hot, as a 400 cranking cold cranking amp battery. So it's a good idea not to go crazy. I would hate to have somebody put a 1,000 CCA battery in a four-cylinder Honda. That's kind of silly.
Okay. All right. That's kind of what I thought, but thank you.
Okay.
The practicality of tire rotation as opposed to the cost of tires and wear and what have you.
No. You have to rotate your tires. When you turn your front tires, when you make a right turn, a 90-degree right turn or a 90-degree left turn, we're laying that tire down on the outside edge. We're going to wear the outside edge. The back tires just simply follow. They don't ever turn. So what we're trying to do is we're rotating the tires to take those ones that have been on the front, a third or a fourth of the life of the tires. We're going to put them on the back, and we're going to take the backs and put them on the front. Now, most of the time, you're going to have one and maybe two rotations in the life of a tire, and most of the time, depending on where you buy your tire, you get the tire rotations for free anyway. But no, it's cheaper to just rotate your tires and maximize their overall life and miles than it is any other possibility.
Okay, that's fair. Thank
Two
you.
Minutes. Okay.
Just quick, like on a new tire, talk about tire depth. A brand new tire, they measure it in 30 seconds. What's a new tire measure?
They can be anywhere from 12 to 16, but you're not really looking at that. I want you to look at tread wear number. Tread wear number.
Okay.
The higher the tread wear number, under ideal conditions, this tire at 550 is going to wear longer than the one at 450.
Okay.
So you have tread wear, which is a number. You want the highest number you can get within reason. Like, not too long ago, I was helping somebody, and, you know, we had a big tread wear number, but then we had one that was just behind it, and the tires were like a third cheaper. And I said, let's go with those. You know
yeah.
what I mean? Now,
uh-huh.
you have tread wear, and then you have an A, and an A, B, and C, and then an A, B, and C. Tread wear, temperature, and traction. Temperature, traction. Traction, A is a snow tire, and C is a street tire. And
okay.
temperature,
1 minute.
A is this car, this is the very best tire to be loaded up. And C, you wouldn't want to put this on a pickup truck that's got a bed full of granite or sand 24/7. So you have tread wear, traction, and temperature. And that's how you find the tire you want.
Okay. Thank you.
All right.
Just one more quickie if you got the time.
I do?
Okay, oil sludge. I had a 1970 Dodge Challenger. I had occasion some years later to have them pull the repair or pull the pan and do some repair. And the guy said
Oh, I can finish your sentence. I can. Go ahead.
There's no sludge in this pan. And I said that's because I was using full synthetic AMSOIL at the time. So I just wanted to add to your oil dissertation that a big advantage of full synthetic is the lack of sludge that's produced.
That's not true. That's not true. It's not true. Sludge is water. Sludge is water. So that means the car was started and run for a while but never got to operating temperature, which is 220. And we know water boils at 212. So as we shut the car off, then we get this condensation of the air inside it, and we get 3, 4, 5 drops of water. And water and oil equals sludge. If you don't have any sludge, it's because you were running at the temperature. You were probably hot-dogging the motor, which I admire, which I don't ever have any sludge in my oil pans either. And it was used for, it wasn't used to go to the liquor store and back, or bashes and back. You drove it. You took it long distances. You evaporated the water. That's what it means. And we'll have more comment right after this. Well, Mark made another mistake. I'm looking at the clock. I'm supposed to be out at exactly 30:00, and I look up, and the clock says 30 minutes and 40 seconds. So I'm 40 seconds late, and you didn't even know that because of my engineer, because of my board operator, because of the guy that produces the show. His name is Gil Estrada. He's the one that makes me look good. He's worth some applause. There. He actually covers.
Ooh, okay. I heard it all.
All righty. Now, Tom, I'm going to get to you in just a minute, but I want to address to Al. Al, let me talk about the sludge thing. In the old days, we had a thermostat that was 160, 180. We know that water is the problem. Water and oil equals sludge. That's what it is. So we know, and everybody thought it was Pennzoil, and everybody had a different oil that didn't have sludge, and if you had sludge, you must be using Pennzoil, and all this other. This went on through the 70s and the 80s, and I was in the middle of it, but I wasn't creating the problem. I was just listening to the problem. So at the end of the day, then all of a sudden we started doing fuel controls and computers, and then all of a sudden we went from a 160, 180 thermostat to a 195, and we started running cars at about 200 to 220. Well, wait a minute. Why did we do that? Oh, I know. Well, first of all, gasoline atomizes. It turns from a liquid to a vapor in a hot environment a lot better than it does when it's 30 below zero. So if we can get the engine temperature up at 220, and that's normal, and that's okay, and that goes for the old cars too, we can go back to the 30s and 40s and still run those cars at 220. It's okay. But the water in the oil, every time you shut your car off, we get a tablespoon of water as the car goes from hot to cold. We condense the water, and there's droplets of water that fall all over inside the engine. That's sludge. So everybody has a different thing for sludge. But really and truly, today's cars in the last, well, shoot, since the mid-95s, when we start going up and we start running cars at 220, we don't see sludge anymore. You open those things up, they can have a 500,000 miles on them, and you can eat off the bottom of the oil pan. But you're going to find the old grizzly guy who pulls that 195 thermostat out, and he puts a big, huge radiator in it because he wants it to run at 180, and then you pull the pan, and it's got 4 inches of Jell-O in it, black Jell-O. And you go, okay, well, I'll clean up your oil pan, but there's nothing else. You're like, well, do you want to change the thermostat back where you were at? You know, do you want to do that? So when you look at your gauge on your car, depending on the year, make, and model, it's going to show somewhere between 200, 190, 200, 210, 220, something like that. If your car runs close to 200 to 220, you are in home heaven. You are perfect. That car will last a very long time. Because we're boiling the water out. Once the engine reaches operating temperatures, the water turns to steam. The PCV valve is a vacuum cleaner. Positive crankcase ventilator or positive crankcase vacuum cleaner. So as soon as the water turns to a vapor, the PCV valve goes, sucks it into the PCV valve system, and you know where it ends up? Going out the tailpipe. That's what we do. We ventilate the crankshaft. Or crankcase. So we're sucking all the moisture and the gas and the trash out and sending it out the tailpipe. So that's what it's all about. Tom, thanks for holding. How can I help you?
Yeah, my question is on brake fluids.
Okay.
Can you mix synthetic brake fluid with conventional .3 brake fluid?
You're not supposed to. The synthetic oil or the synthetic brake fluid is different. And many times we've had cars come in with brake problems, and we pull a we use a big old baster, turkey baster, and we suck brake fluid out and we put it in a glass jar. And then 2 hours later, you go back in and you can see there's a separation. And now we know that we have some synthetic and some conventional dot three, dot four. And so we just flush the system and put it back together, and everything is okay. So it's not a good idea. And if that does happen, a lot of times we just, using a turkey baster, we just suck all the brake fluid out of both of the master cylinder reservoirs and put clean fluid in. Then we bleed the heck out of it, and then we're done. And about 90% of the time, that's all you need.
Oh, okay. And I got another question for you on advice you gave a guy here just a little bit ago. He wanted to change the bearings, the rod bearings on his, in his engine.
Uh-huh.
Wouldn't you mic the shaft up, though, before you start jerking it out to put the new bearings in? You know, I was thinking, you say you pull the engine and you like to put it on a stand. That's primo. That's super. But if you wanted to do it in the car, you just drop the pan, and couldn't you go through and just, if the shaft mic'd up okay, couldn't you just go through and replace the bearings?
1 minute.
Well, it's much deeper than that. Because the bearing and then the crankshaft can both wear, and if the bearing starts spinning, then it's going to wear the hole in the for the crankshaft. So I'm assuming that he has been correctly diagnosed that he has a rod bearing that's bad. And so at this particular point, we're going to get a crankshaft, and we're going to put new bearings that match that crankshaft, and we're going to put the crank and the bearings in at the same time. And they're all matched. Now, we're going to use this, I can't remember what the name of it is, but there's this little rope that we use, and we put it on the crankshaft, and we put the cap, and we torque it. Then we take the cap off, and the rope has been squished, and then we have this piece of paper, and it tells us that you have 2,000 thick, 3,000 thick, and we know what the tolerance is, and we do that on a new crankshaft. But, yes, that is part of the problem, but I didn't get that technical with that gentleman. But you're right. You're exactly right.
Okay. Well, anyway, well, thank you. Nice talking to you. And your advice to me would be then don't blend them. Oh, and who do you like for a tranny shop for a standard Nissan 5-speed transmission?
What part of town are you in?
I'm on in the West Valley up here on Northern and 51st Avenue.
I would talk to Harker's at 38th Avenue and Indian School. Bob's an old-time guy. His wife, Ellen, runs the front of the shop. Jeremy is this wizard kid that works for them. I think he's a nephew or something like that. Bob will know exactly what's wrong. Bob will be able to bid it, and Bob will be able to fix it. But I also want to tell you that many, many times when people bring us manual transmissions, it's not the manual transmission. It's a U-joint. It's a broken flywheel. It's a broken spring on the pressure plate. There's so many different things it can be. We had a Nissan in not so long ago where the throw-out bearing seized to the snout of the transmission. And so the clutch activity was completely defective. But once we slid the tranny back, we could see that.
That'd be making some noise. No, I think I have an input shaft bearing, that which I think is a common failing item in these cars, either input shaft bearing or countershaft bearing, front countershaft bearing. And it's just got a little growl when you put it in neutral.
Okay.
And so anyway.
Well, let me talk about that for just a second, if you would, please.
Yeah.
The input shaft is only supposed to, anything's wrong is under a load. When it's just sitting there and you're just revving the motor up, there's no load. We're in neutral and we're revving the motor up. And if you've got a noise, the only thing that's moving is the input shaft. But there's a lot of other places we can have noise that makes it look like the input shaft. But I can tell you this. I'm sending you to the right place because Harker's Bob can handle that. May I make a suggestion to you? You say to Bob,
sure.
I have a noise. I'd like to demonstrate the noise for you. I'd like to leave. You take me home, and then you call me and tell me what you found. That's what I would do. and because if you demonstrate to him, first of all, he's going to hug you because nobody ever does that. So you say, come on out here. I'm going to show you how to make the noise happen. And then I want you to bid the repair. That's what you do. And
now, if I do that, he's not going to call me and tell me, listen, I'm halfway to El Paso and I still can't find what the hell you're talking about.
No, because you're going to teach him how to do it. You're going to teach him. You're going to say, I want you to get your butt out in this. And now, Monday morning and Friday afternoons is not a time to go in there, okay?
Okay.
And you still got to get past Ellen. Now, when you get past Ellen, you're going to walk in and you're going to say, hey, hi, my name's Tom, and I was wondering if I could have a few minutes with Bob. And Mark Salem said that you may say no, but he said call him first and he can think, see, he can change your mind.
Okay, that would be Harker's, and if I got this right, 38th Avenue in Indian School?
That's correct. Larry Harker's Auto Repair. He's been around since 1967. 38th Avenue in Indian School.
Thank you for that, Mark.
Okay, thank you very much, Tom. I got to take a break. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back, everybody. 45 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. Gil, you might as well plan on sending me the show because my recording just gave up the ghost. So if you wouldn't mind, when you get a chance, no hurry.
You got
just it. Send me the whole show, buddy. We're going to go straight to the phones. Wayne, you're up first. How can I help you?
Your favorite nemesis, the sometime problem.
Okay.
2003 Chrysler Town and Country van, 3.8-liter engine. Picked it up in L.A., as a donation, took it to a mechanic, checked everything over, everything was running fine. Got to Phoenix, everything was running fine. Got to Payson, and dives at the signal light at the casino. And finally get it started limping into the gas station. A couple hours, cools off, runs fine. It seems like it's starting for gas.
Okay. Hold on. We don't need to talk much longer. Because the question is it spark or fuel? That's all there is to it. So you lost fuel pressure or you lost spark when it died and it would crank over but wouldn't catch. You let it sit and cooled off, and now it starts and runs. So this is an easy one. We got to find out. We got to get it really hot and get it warm, and then we got to shut it off, and we got to get it and to where we're missing spark or fuel. And then we got to figure out what's causing it. It's an easy one to talk about, but there's no way I can guess appropriately based on, you know, the fact that it's a town and country.
Right. You got to replicate the problem, Steve, and actually trace it.
Yeah. Have you got a repair shop in Payson you like?
Well, called every mechanic in Payson. They're telling me next week or the following week.
Okay.
But now in Oklahoma, limped it that far, and I got a mechanic in Oklahoma City.
Okay. All right. Well, that's if you had a can of carb spray and you had an old spark plug, and when it cranks but doesn't start, then you unplug a wire, you stick the spark plug in there, you crank it over, and you have your wife crank it over, and you look and you say, there's no spark. Okay, fine. We're done. Now you have to figure out if it's a crankshaft sensor, is it a camshaft sensor, is it the ignition module, is it the coil? You have to figure out all that. So, but if you want, my email address is mark@marksalem.com, mark@marksalem.com, and Coyote Automotive is my place, and that's where I send my mother-in-law in Payson, is Coyote Automotive. And I know it's going to take him a while to get to you, but everybody in the world is busier than heck right now.
Yeah, I know it. Maybe 10 days of Coyote.
Yeah. Well, that's the best I can do. I want to tell you something. There's a couple of shops in there that their names don't ever come through my mouth. But it's like that in Tempe and Mesa and Chandler, too. So I'm not saying Payson's better or worse, but Coyote. And if not, then ask Dan who he would recommend you to, and we'll go from there. I got to run. Thank you very much, Wayne. Michael, you're up next. How can I help you?
I have a 2000 Buick Century with 135,000 miles on it. Thursday, I went out and went on a little drive, and the battery wasn't turning the engine over too good. Friday morning, I went out, and there was just a click. So I have to call road service and then go over to AutoZone and get a new battery. I was wondering, is it okay to wait till tomorrow when things will be a bit more mellow, or can I do it? Should I get in a hurry to do it today?
Oh, it doesn't make any difference. I don't think it makes any difference. I think AutoZone will install the battery for you, won't they?
Yeah, but I'm just wondering, would it make the battery more deader if I wait one more day?
No, if you can get it started and drive there, you're home free. Because the alternator is going to provide the necessary electricity to keep the car running. It's starting. We need 9.6 volts, at least 9.6, to crank it over. The ignition system will work fine on 10 volts or 11 volts or 12 volts. So I don't know if
road service is going to start it for me.
Okay. All right. If road service is going to start it for you, doesn't your road service have free towing?
Well, I'll just drive it across the street to AutoZone.
Okay, well, those are decisions you make. Those are yours to make. But well, good luck
but
to
even
you.
But if my battery is almost dead, would it still be able to start?
Yes, that's what Jumpers does. It takes the battery from the good truck and puts it and brings your battery from 8 volts to 12 or 13 volts. Then you start your car. Then the alternator takes over, and the alternator is trying to fill up this battery that's obviously bad, and you drive it across the street. No big deal. No big deal. Okay, thanks, Michael. Daniel, you're up next. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mark. Hey, enjoying your show.
Thank you.
Hey, had a question about your shop's protocol on brake jobs. Have a 2005 Trailblazer, 130,000 miles, never had any brake work. Do you normally rebuild the calipers at that interval, or what would for
okay.
having pads?
Easy question. I'm not going to do anything that I don't see symptoms for. Okay, let me give you an example. If I have some really unusual wear and both pads are worn evenly, then more than likely the wheel bearing's bad. If I have the inboard pad worn really bad and obviously more than the outboard pad, then I'm going to replace the caliper or rebuild the caliper. But if the outboard pad is worn a lot more than the inboard pad, then I'm going to hang new hardware on it. Ha, ha, ha. It's that easy.
Okay.
You look at the pad wear, and that's all you do is look at the pad wear. Now,
okay,
rebuilt caliper, rebuilding the caliper, that's the most expensive. The wheel bearing's up there with that. But as far as a hardware kit's concerned, it's an extra $20 for an axle. $20, $30, $40 for an axle. Okay?
Okay. Hey, and one other question from your industry perspective.
Okay.
What are your thoughts on our current political climate when for our fire-breathing engines before no more fuel available? What's your... I know that's...
I don't do politics, but I want to tell you something. If I wanted everybody's attention and if I was president for a day, I would talk about how I'm going to effectively change your ability to put gas in your car and go where you want and take the kids to tennis lessons and all that kind of stuff. If I wanted everybody's attention, I would do just exactly that. But the fact of the matter is the major oil companies sell gasoline for a living, and unless the government's going to come up with some rule that says you can't sell gasoline from Friday night midnight till Monday morning, you know, at 6 o'clock, which is never going to happen, then there should be no political interference with respect to the price of gas. And I also want to comment there because you opened the door, so I'm going to step through it.
Okay, so, that's what I wanted your perspective from your.
I ran a gas station for many years, many, many years. I worked at a gas station when I was in high school as a sophomore. The gasoline, what we buy it for, we mark it up what we call a weighted average. We would love to make 3 or 4 or 5 cents a gallon. And in the heydays, maybe we could touch 10 cents a gallon. Maybe. So there's a weighted average margin dependent on what percentage of your fuel is regular, premium, and diesel. And so we're going to weighted average. We're going to price those appropriately. We're not, the gasoline industry isn't making a heck of a lot of money. They're trying to do volume because if we have 10,000 gallons and we sell 10,000 gallons and we make a penny a gallon, that's okay. But if we sell 20,000 gallons and we make a penny a gallon, then we're much better off. So right now, the people with gas stations, the people that have bays, the people that have, mom and dad are there and the kids are there, those people are not, they're not making money. It's the Exxons and the Shells and those kinds of guys. There's a whole, because we're gonna sell it for a weighted average margin over what we buy it for. And we have to be in the market. So if they sell us gasoline for $3 a gallon and the market is $3.10 a gallon, we better be around $3.10 and maybe we'll try 15 to see if our volume falls off. But if it does fall off, we got to back it up to 310 because that's the market. And on top of all of that, we have apps on our phones that tells us what the gasoline price is within 15,000 miles of where you're at. And so, I don't know if you do it or not, but I have a gas app. And not only that, there's a new gas app out now that actually was advertised on this station. and I don't remember what the name of it is, but my wife uses it, and when I fill up my diesel, sometimes I get 20 cents off a gallon, and it's put in my PayPal account within an hour. And it's really amazing. So I don't remember. Gil, do you remember what that app was or what it was called?
Yeah, that's Upstart.
Upstart. Thank you. Upstart. Because my wife said, oh, I heard about this on the radio. And I said, so did I. They advertised it on my radio show. And she said, well, let's try it. I go, oh, honey. She says, let's try it. Whew, I'm telling you what. The other day I was looked at my PayPal account, and I think I have $55 in rebates in my PayPal account. Now, I have my kids using PayPal on the company cards, their personal cards. I've got it on both company and personal. Renee's got it on both company and so we're all in it. And we're all and it's just a really great thing, and I don't know how they do it, and I don't care. I can just tell you it works.
So they keep putting the money in there.
That's exactly. Yep. And you know, the other day we filled up and I think the limit that day was $175, and I was driving my big semi. So I could only put in $175. And I said, I want to know when they put the money in our account. She goes, okay. So we were heading from Payson to Phoenix. I was hauling a tractor down. And we were 10 miles outside of town. And she goes, $5.25 just hit our account. That's how far it was. So Upstart. It's a great app. I'm just telling you, it's a great app. And I don't have it. You're not, I don't make money on it. But if you're kind of computer savvy and you have a smartphone, this is an app, and then you just find it. You find the discount, then you commit to it, or there's a word they use where you reserve it. Then you go in and you get gas, and they want to know what credit card you're using, so you have to use the same credit card on all of them. And so I just use my Discover card because I get points on it. And so, and then, you know, it's a great thing, and I'm buying gas between 8 and 25 cents cheaper than the pump price when I take it from the pump. And it's on Circle K's and, you know, all kinds of fuel stations.
Yeah. But when you think we're going to hit $10 a gallon, you going to run a contest?
No, I think we're going to drop a bit of the next presidential election is what I think.
That's what we're hoping.
Yes, sir, we are. Yes, we are. Okay. All righty. Thank you very much. All righty. I was talking about strictly diesel service and repair. I've known Nate for a very long time. He's up at I-17 in Pinnacle Peak. If you've got a diesel Dodge, Chevy, or Ford, and it makes no difference if the problem is between the front bumper and the back bumper, Nate will have comment. And more than likely, 99% of the times, Nate will be able to find it and fix it. Now, see, there's a find before the word fix. So I can't say Nate will be able to fix it because he's got to find it first. So Nate's a good guy, strictly diesel, service and repair, and that's the way it is. And we also talked about Thompson's Auto Repair. Let me tell you that I really love Thelma and Brian, who own Thompson's Auto Repair in Mesa. I think they are the finest people that I can call my friend. But the roof blew off their shop, and they were out of town. And so they've had some really ups and downs. If you're a client of Thompson's Auto Repair, they're on Mesa and Stapley Drive. Please continue to be a client of theirs. But their insurance companies are working very hard to get him back out of the ground. And so that's kind of the way it is. I'll see you next Saturday. Thompson's Auto Repair, if you're in Mesa, maybe stop by and say hi.
You still got 50 seconds.
Okay, well, if I've got 50 seconds, then I'm going to say, Gil, thank you very much for keeping me straight and narrow today. Oh, by the way, I wasn't very happy with the home improvement place, but evidently my wife, they got in touch with my wife because I was on the radio, and she got my phone, and my toolbox is in the back of my truck, and there was the appropriate apologies, and so I'm kind of happy, but there is one lady there that is not going to be invited to the Salem family for dinner. And I have a photographic memory, so. But nevertheless, I am a forgiving person, but I am grateful to the manager that contacted us and worked with my wife while I was on the radio, and everything was fine. God bless you. Drive safe. Wear your seatbelt.